Although the political activist, psychologist, philosopher, and human rights advocate Eric Fromm was undoubtedly one of the most prolific and influential figures of the 20th century, most people under the age of 40 are unlikely to even recognize his name. From his early days in Europe, where he studied Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah, to his later years in the Americas, where he was a prominent interpreter of psychoanalysis, Fromm amassed a body of work that earned him fame in a wide variety of fields across the globe. Last May, Lawrence J. Friedman, a professor at Harvard University's Mind-Brain-Behavior Initiative and professor emeritus at Indiana University, was here to discuss his comprehensive biography called The Lives of Eric Fromm, Love's Prophet. It's published by Columbia University Press, and we are re-airing that interview today. I began by asking him, you've called your book The Lives of Eric Fromm because he did so many things, but you also call him the Prophet of Love. What did he do to earn that title?
Yes, that was probably his most important love. He wrote a book that sold about 33 million copies. International, called The Art of Loving. And the question is, why did that book, and it still does sell, it's in the Harvard Coop window every Valentine's Day.
Now, he had written other books which were directed more at academics, weren't they? But did he write that book, The Art of Loving, with a wider audience in mind?
Well, he wrote 31 books in all, and only one sold less than a million. I mean, he wrote, I think, to big publics for most of them. The Art of Loving, I think, still sells well because you get, when you look at it, a sense of authenticity. And he fell in love for the first time, and he wrote letters to his wife-to-be, Anise Freeman. He would write 3-4 times a day letters to her and buy her chocolates. And that sense of deep love went right into the book.
Now, he must have made a lot of money from the sale of those books, even though he taught throughout most of his career and also worked as an analyst. But was that money what allowed him to fund highly influential NGOs, most notably Amnesty International?
That's exactly it. He died very middle-class income. Just about every penny he made, he funded. He funded the Committee for Sane Nuclear Policy, Amnesty International. He funded political campaigns.
Now, this seems like a big stretch for somebody who is a psychoanalyst. Did he see his political interests as being inextricably tied to his work as an analyst?
No. One reason I titled the book The Lives of Eric Fromm, he does several things. I mean, the energy of this man, political was one track. He was a Talmudic scholar, that was another. An author, a political activist. I can go on and on. It's enormous, the range of this guy. And he looked at it as separate callings.
Now, when he founded Amnesty International, was his vision of the organization similar to what we see today?
Yes, I think so. You're going to find brutalities all over the world, conducted largely by governments. And he put in the money that created it and kept it going for its first 20 years. But there's another quality, and those of us in Amnesty can't really emulate it. He was tremendously adept in international affairs. He'd go to Bertrand Russell, Khrushchev, what have you, and pull off deals to rescue people.
Now, he came to psychotherapy through some very influential people. He studied with Carl Jasper. Would Jasper have approved? Would Freud have approved of all this political activity?
No, neither would have approved of it. And I think it goes to his, he studied to be a rabbi initially. And he wrote a wonderful book on Ye Shall Be As Gods, looking at the Old Testament. And what he concluded is any religion, if it's worth anything, is about ethics between people. And hence, you move in every calling into ethical behavior. That's the common denominator.
He was also interested in Jewish mysticism, the Kabbalah.
Yeah.
went to Lithuania to study it rather than why wouldn't he have stayed in Germany?
Well, his father prohibited him from going to Lithuania, so he studied it largely at Heidelberg. And the question, why did he move from this? Buddhism. Yeah, a huge range of interests and acting on all of them.
To some degree, it sounds like the sort of thing that we later see at Esalen. In fact, some of his ideas about love as well. So was he an influence on those kinds of those later psychological movements?
Well, I think he's an influence on us today. I think he's more influential on us than Freud, because what he stressed in his concept of central relatedness is connectedness between people, like his colleague Harry Stack Sullivan. You pick up a psychology journal today, it's not going to be Freud, it's going to be the connectedness thing.
He also has described as a member of the Frankfurt School, which is a political group. People like Adorno and Hannah Arendt, in his case, because he was born in Frankfurt, or had he already been involved in the political aspect of his life while he was in Europe?
Well, he didn't relate to his being born in Frankfurt. His major education was at Heidelberg with Hannah Arendt. But he's brought in the late 20s to the Frankfurt Institute because he brings his own brand of psychoanalysis to the group, which was primarily social and psychological.
So he had a sociological bent that he's bringing to psychiatry.
He got his doctorate in sociology, really. And then he was analyzed, Dave, in the German Psychoanalytic Institute, and the Frankfurt Institute wants to see how he fuses them.
How was he able to escape Germany after Hitler came to power?
Well, he not only escaped Germany, he brought the whole Frankfurt Institute to Columbia, gave it a home there.
Columbia University.
Yes, yes. And he talked the president into accepting it, taking it on. And not only did he come out of Germany in 1934, but he came back trying to rescue people.
And was he able to establish himself as a therapist from the start after he got here?
Pretty much so. Yeah. I think he did. And
then he connected with to Karen Horney, who was very influential.
Yeah.
Psychotherapist here in New York, and they had a kind of collaboration for a while until they had a rather public split.
That's right. The relationship with Horney didn't do what you'd expect. Horney was a feminist, brought feminism into psychoanalysis. It didn't quite bring Fromm into that there. But in terms of his influence, what's generally not known is he brought psychoanalysis to Mexico. It's called Frommian analysis. It's still around.
Now, how is Frommian analysis all that different from Freudian, Adlerian, Reichian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
His major concept was called social character. And what social character is whatever comes out of you is then shaped by the social circumstances. And he's very hopeful that society can help to form happy, contented people. That's not Freud. That's not Adler. It's a social psychology for a whole society.
But there's also a political aspect to it. In fact, his book, Escape from Freedom, perhaps best-known scholarly work, established the whole concept of political psychology, didn't it?
Well, I think so in terms of important books. The Escape from Freedom is a really important book. It's probably, I think, his most important. The broad theme, as he's writing, as fascism is taking hold all over Europe, is sadomasochism. You step on the person below, you celebrate the dictator above. And, of course, condemnatory, and the alternative was democracy. Well, I've found that every place there has been, since Hungary in 1956, a revolt against dictatorship, Fromm's Escape from Freedom becomes a fashionable book. And the most I was so surprised, Arab Spring, the first country to go off, breaking from dictatorship, there's a national police store and the biggest bookstore in the country across the street. Fromm was banned, Escape from Freedom was banned, and then a day or so after the dictator goes, the store is full of Escape from Freedom plus Art of Loving.
My guest is Lawrence J. Friedman, who's written The Lives of Eric Fromm, Love's Prophet. You mentioned that he went to Mexico. He went in 1949. Did he go because he was horrified by what was happening in this country, the Red Scare, McCarthyism, or was he just attracted to Mexico?
Well, he went to Mexico because his second wife, Henny Gerlin, had very severe rheumatoid arthritis, and he hoped that the warm springs around Mexico City could help her. Well, they didn't help her, and we have the most tragic thing in his life. She commits suicide out of the pain. But he goes to Mexico, I think, because he wants to do something more creative than the American psychoanalytic societies. He wants to create a social emphasis, and he does that.
And he stayed in Mexico for how long?
23 years.
Also got very involved in the arts of Mexico as a promoter of the arts.
Oh, yes, yes. I should tell you, in terms of Fromm, the money he made from the books is enormous, but the giveaway, he gave money to the arts. He gave a lot of money to public radio. He loved public radio.
In fact, I wouldn't be here. That's the reason you're here. No. he taught, despite the fact that he had no real credentials in the field?
Yeah. He
university just overlooked that?
Well, the Eric Erickson, Harvard wouldn't hire until he was persuaded by David Reisman that he'd be the best teacher at Harvard. He had a PhD, and that may have counted for something here. But he went because everyone in the world has heard of Eric Fromm, and the students loved him.
And he died in 1980?
Yes.
What was his situation at the end of his life? Was he still thinking more as a psychologist, a psychiatrist, or as somebody who was involved in things like Amnesty International?
Everything. all of them. And, in fact, he's writing a book at the end of his life here. And just something funny that I end the book with. One of his students has a dream after he died. And in the dream, she's asked by someone, what has Fromm been doing? And she said, well, of course he's writing another book.
So that was his students were caught up in the whole thing.
Yeah.
About how many books did he write altogether?
He wrote 31 books.
And you say almost all of them sold very well.
With one exception, over 1 million copies.
And why do you think that other book didn't sell well?
Social Character in the Mexican Village, it's called, because he let a quantitative sociologist take over.
He studied a peasant village in the south of Mexico?
That's right.
And in hopes of doing what? As a sociologist, or was he giving people psychotherapy?
No, he wasn't. And there was a village about 50 miles south of Mexico City, and the population either had alcoholism, depression, or what. Here's a person who thinks you can cure everything. Build the sociology of the village. Build a relationship, and it succeeded.
Now, you said that his ideas are still being felt today. Can you give me an example?
Yes. His second concept, in addition to social character, is central relatedness. And this is quite different than Freud or most other therapists. It's you open yourself to the patient as the patient opens yourself, himself or herself, to you. And that is there. It's here now. It's being used.
So he was much more open about himself to his patients rather than just simply saying things like, why do you say that?
Yeah, he got the patient into his life. He got into their life.
Wasn't there a problem with transference? Wouldn't
there
the
is
have
that problem?
That?
There is, and you're right to note it. And part of the and he wasn't successful in all cases. At points, he breached the line that a therapist needs to have.
Lawrence J. Friedman is a professor in Harvard University's Mind Brain Behavior Initiative, professor emeritus at Indiana University. His book, The Lives of Eric Fromm, Love's Prophet, is published by Columbia University Press, appropriately, because that's where Fromm came to teach. Thank you so much for coming on our show.